Hello, shalom. My name is Nachum Amzel, and this podcast is What Does Judaism Say About? This is the full podcast. Today's topic is the Jewish view of the land of Israel and its ties to Judaism. This sensitive and emotional topic is a podcast that is addressed to three distinct groups of people in the world, all of whom, by and large, are ignorant of what traditional Jew says about the relationship of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. The first part of the podcast will be for the majority of non-Jews in the world who foolishly believe that Judaism can exist as a religion without the concepts of Israel as its homeland and Jerusalem as its holiest city. The second group are the majority of Jews who may believe that the state of Israel simply as a national Jewish homeland, devoid of the ritual part of Judaism, the mitzvot, can also be an essential lifestyle and complete lifestyle for the Jew. To be a good Jew, according to these people, one need only physically live in the land of Israel, speak its language, and be part of its culture. The third audience of this podcast is an emphasis to those devout groups of Jews who are traditionally observant and somehow erroneously believe that Jews can be a maximal Jewish religious experience without the land of Israel at all. After the destruction of the temples 2,000 years ago, it is true that Jews and Judaism had to adapt in order to learn how to survive and even thrive without being physically in the land. Thus, many Jews mistakenly came to believe that this diaspora existence is the ideal form of Judaism. All the facts and all the arguments in this podcast will come only from Jewish sources themselves. Normally, the thrust of this podcast is to never be political, but rather reflect the normative view of traditional Judaism. However, by its very nature and the climate of world opinion today, this emotional topic may necessarily impact upon one's political views. It has become apparent in the last few years that world history is being taught in many locations as a series of conflicts between the colonialists who wished to obtain land and the indigenous people who were the victims and whose lands and rights were taken away. It is clear then that many people see the story of the State of Israel as colonialist, and some see it from the point of view as the indigenous people, the Jews, returning to their homeland. Thus, if the Jews in Israel are seen as colonialists or indigenous people returning to their land, they will be viewed quite differently by those teaching history through this lens. And who is the oppressor and who is actually the victim? No historical sources will be used in this podcast to prove one way or the other that the Jews lived in the land of Israel for hundreds of years, since there are many other podcasts that deal with this issue from a historical perspective. Nor will any political theory be propounded. We will examine the Jews' relationship to the land of Israel purely based on the traditional Jewish sources themselves. Thus, let us examine the sources and see what they reveal to us. The very first words uttered by God to the very first Jew, Abraham, were to leave his homeland in Mesopotamia and come to live in the land of Israel. The repeated promise by God to Abraham contained only two themes: producing a large nation and keeping the land of Israel forever. In the Torah, God did not speak to Abraham at all about learning Torah, observing Shabbat, keeping kosher, or any other mitzvah commandment except circumcision. These two promises of a large nation and the land of Israel itself were passed down by God to Isaac, son of Abraham, and then by God to Jacob. Therefore, the Jewish claim to the land today is based on that promise of God to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that the Jewish people will inherit the land forever. Without a belief in this promise, the Arabs cannot be faulted in claiming that the Jews in the 1800s suddenly decided to take over their land. While Jews do not expect Arabs to believe their claim simply because it says so in the Torah, Jews themselves who do not believe in Judaism as a religion cannot for themselves justify that Jewish claim of the land of Israel. But if Jews believe in the Torah and God's promise to the Jews to give them the land forever, then their claim has some validity. Thus, the land was the focus of Judaism from the very first words uttered to Abraham, continuing through today. The very first question by the most famous Torah commentary in Scripture, Rashi, asks in the very first verse in Genesis, why the Torah, essentially a book of commandments, must begin in Genesis with the birth of the world, rather than in Exodus with the very first Torah commandment to the Jewish people. Rashi's answer is that the Torah stresses that the entire purpose of the very first book of the Torah was to justify the Jewish claim later to the land of Israel, since only if God created the world and made that promise to the forefathers could the Jews justify conquering Israel after their enslavement in Egypt, and then again in the 20th century. And lest any nation or any non-observant Jew think that the land lost its focus for the Jews after they were exiled nearly 2,000 years ago, Jewish religious practice kept the land of Israel as the central focus of its existence since the temple's destruction until the present day. Unlike all other peoples who leave their land and after a few generations forget about their origin, each day the emphasis of all prayer in Judaism three times a day has always been towards the land of Israel, both in its physical facing the land of Israel and content. It is the conscious direction towards Israel and the temple that a Jew always faces while praying, no matter where on earth that Jew may be. The Talmud says that every activity of the Jew should have some reminder that Jews do not currently have the land of Israel or the temple. Therefore, each time a Jew eats a festive meal, he or she should omit one of the courses as a reminder that the Jews do not have the land or the temple. Each time a woman wears jewelry, she should not wear one piece as a reminder that the Jews do not have the land or the temple. While these two particular customs have not been adapted by most Jews in practice, there are many, many other customs in the rest of the Talmud that have been practiced by Jews for hundreds of years since Talmudic times. For example, every time a traditional Jew eats a cookie and makes a blessing before and after, in that after blessing of the cookie or a meal, Jerusalem and the return to Jerusalem is always mentioned. And at the happiest moments of life, the Jew reminds himself or herself about the lack of the temple and the homeland. At the moment when Jews make this most expensive purchase, when a home is dedicated, a cornerstone is traditionally not painted for the same reason. At the happiest moment of a person's life, usually the wedding day, the ceremony is not completed without the bride and the groom reminding everyone present and themselves that the destruction of the temple and the lack of a homeland still causes Jews pain. By sprinkling ashes on the forehead, and today we also symbolically break a glass for the same purpose. At the saddest moments of life as well, the Jew also does not forget about the land. There is one day in the year, the saddest day in the year, which is a remembrance of the destruction of the temple, and it is a holiday, if we can call it that, where Jews sit shiva and mourn the way they would mourn for any other loss of a relative. And when they do mourn for a relative's loss, the traditional phrase of comfort to the mourner is, may you be comforted with all the other mourners of Zion and Jerusalem. The pain of the loss of a close relative is compared to the national pain of the Jewish people who have lost their land. Therefore, the land has always been and continues to be today the focus of Judaism. Without a belief in Judaism as a religion demonstrated by all religious customs, the validity of claims that Israel is the land of the Jewish people is somehow missing. In addition, The holiest city to the Jews, Jerusalem, is mentioned 661 times in the Jewish Bible, while this city, Jerusalem, the third holiest city to Muslims, is not mentioned at all in the Quran. Thus, Judaism, without the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem, may be a fine religion, but devoid of the land of Israel, it cannot be called Judaism in its traditional sense, observed for over 3,000 years. And for those Israelis who think that a life in Israel without practicing the rituals of Judaism is sufficient to be a good Jew and a full Jew, they must think again. It is not by accident that when the Ten Commandments they were given in two separate tablets. The Ten could have easily been given in one tablet, but God purposely gave them in two equal five tablets in order to demonstrate a point. The first five tablets are laws between man and God, and the second five tablets are laws between man and man. Just as Judaism could not be a complete religion with just five of the tablets in either direction, so too could Judaism not be just living in Israel devoid of ritual. It might be a nice culture, but it is certainly not Judaism. And there are many other examples where you cannot be a full Jew unless you believe in the ritual, mitzvot, commandment size of the tablets as well. And for those religious Jews living outside the land of Israel, we will show through sources that Judaism simply is incomplete without the land. The primacy of living in Jewish life in the land of Israel demonstrates that the land of Israel is truly the focus of Judaism in all areas of Jewish behavior. So for these Jews who are devout, living in Antwerp and Muncie, New York, or Golders Green, and think that if they live complete lives, filling them lives with Torah learning and keeping the mitzvot, somehow their Judaism is complete. But we will see that according to Jewish tradition, they are wrong, and they are misleading themselves. Firstly, learning Torah itself. There are many statements saying there is no better or more appropriate place to learn Torah than in the land of Israel. The Talmud says that if a Jew does not mention the concept of Torah learning while also saying the blessing about the land of Israel in the grace after meals blessing, then that blessing must be repeated, because one cannot have one concept without the other. Another statement in Chagiga says that leaving the land of Israel is the greatest example of bitul Torah, taking time away from Torah learning, because leaving the land of Israel automatically implies a person will learn less Torah. What about prayer? It should not be a difficult task to convince any Jew about the holiness of Jerusalem, especially for prayer. Since the remnant of the temple, the Western Wall, the holiest place on earth for the Jew, is located in that city. The sources maintain that even today, there is God's presence somehow near the Western Wall, whatever that means. But even before the temple was built on that spot, Jerusalem possessed a special holiness. That is why the temple, the place of communication with God through sacrifice and prayer, could only be built in Jerusalem. Long before the temple was built, that spot on the temple had been used as a place to pray to God. According to Maimonides, it is the place where Cain and Abel brought their very first sacrifices to God in human history. Mount Moriah is also the traditional place of the binding of Isaac, where Abraham was willing to sacrifice his son upon God's commandment. Jacob prayed the traditional evening prayer there for the first time, and it was also the place of Jacob's holy dream in which the angels were going up and down on a ladder from heaven, symbolizing Jewish history. The land of Israel was later legally intertwined with a special law, with the coming to the temple three times each year. The Talmud states that if a Jew did not own land, he or she could not fulfill the mitzvah to come to the temple three times a year at each Jewish holiday, based on the Torah verse in Deuteronomy. Thus, if you did not live and own land in Israel, you could not come to see God and be with God three times a year, according to the Torah. And it is only on this land that a religious Jew can fulfill his or her Torah commandments to the max. Although most pious Jews in the diaspora would never think of their observance as anything but fulfilling the Torah's entire wishes to the maximum, according to one midrash, there is no obligation at all to keep the mitzvot commandment outside the land of Israel. However, the rabbis instituted the observance in the diaspora only so that the people do not forget how to keep the commandments, so that when they eventually return to the land, they will know what to do. It should be pointed out that this is not Jewish law in practice. Jewish people in the diaspora are obligated to keep the commandments, despite this midrash. The dying request by Moses, never fulfilled by God, was to enter the land of Israel. Why was it so important for Moses to enter? Only in order to be able to fulfill more commandments there, says the Talmud. There is something special about performance of the mitzvot in Israel as well. And there are many, many commandments that cannot possibly be observed except in the land of Israel, such as all the commandments related to the growing of food in the land and then eating it. This place is also the place of God. Of course, God has no form and technically does not exist in any one place, but exists in all places at the same time. Nevertheless, the holiness of the land of Israel still makes it a special place for God and the place for man to best relate to him. This concept is basic to the Jewish understanding of all holy places, be it the synagogue or the Temple Mount. The rabbis have made numerous references to the holiness of the land of Israel in the way each Jew relates to God. There are some very harsh statements about those Jews who do not live in the land of Israel. For example, it says that anyone living outside the land of Israel is like having no God at all. Therefore, continues the passage, it is preferable to live in a non-Jewish part of Israel, surrounded by non-Jews, rather than to live in a totally observant neighborhood in Brooklyn, outside the land of Israel. In his philosophic work, The Kuzari, Rabbi Judah Halevi states that the Jewish people's relationship to God can only blossom in the land of Israel. Clearly, the land of Israel is more than just a place for religious Jews to live. A full and complete religious life is impossible outside the land of Israel, and Judaism is tied inexorably to the land itself. Many of the non-observant Jews in Israel today falsely believe that the land is special and that it provides a homeland for the Jewish people. But there is nothing intrinsic about the land which makes it so special, so holy. This is not the normative and traditional Jewish approach, of course. There is something unique about this land which makes it respond differently from any other soil in the world. As Ben-Gurion, who was certainly not a religious person, said, "Anybody who does not believe in miracles in this land is not a realist. It is the only place on earth which responds physically to the moral behavior of the people in it. Each day, traditional Jews say twice in the second paragraph of the Shema that if the Jewish people observe the commandments and behave morally, the land will respond by having enough rain and producing enough crops. If the Jews stray from God, they will be forced to leave the land." The same idea is repeated many times in the Torah, including at the beginning of the portion of B'chukotai, where it says that the reward for keeping the Torah's statutes will be proper rain and enough crops to consume until one is satiated. Therefore, both the quantity and the quality of the crops at that time meant wealth that the land of Israel will produce depends specifically on the behavior of its inhabitants. This idea is echoed in a different context when it says that the land will vomit out all of its inhabitants if they act in an abominable manner, referring to improper sexual behavior. Although people normally associate divine providence of God in relation to people, when it comes to the land of Israel, God declares that there is also divine providence directly with the land itself, not only with people. God watches the land constantly from the beginning of the year until the end of the year, says the verse in Deuteronomy, seeking out the land. It is apparent, then, that the land of Israel from a Jewish perspective is truly unique and cannot be looked upon as just another piece of earth. It is clear, then, that both components of state and religion are integral parts of the whole of Judaism. There cannot be a religion called Judaism without the land as an integral part, just as there cannot be a nation of Jews without the Torah as a basis. One without the other is incomplete and indefensible Jewishly. Ties to the land can only be justified through God and the Torah, and God's conception of Judaism is incomplete with mitzvot observance alone. To be complete, the Jew needs both. When she desired to join her mother-in-law and the Jewish people as a convert, the ideal convert, Ruth, uttered a phrase that reflects both these concepts. Your people is my people, and your God is my God. Amech ami, ve'elokayech elokai. This dual concept is also reflected in the two Jewish holidays of Passover and Shavuot, the Feast of Redemption from Egypt, Passover, and the Feast of Weeks, where the Torah was given. Liberation of a people physically, who eventually became a religion on Shavuot. Shavuot celebrates the giving of the Torah when Judaism became a religion for all Jews. Both holidays are needed, and both are components of Judaism that must be there. And both are connected together by the commandment in the Torah to count each day between Passover and Shavuot, a seven-week counting of the Omer, which symbolically bridges these two events in Jewish history. Thus, each component is tied to the other. The Midrash says that there are four concepts called inheritance in Mechilta B'Shalach, in the scripture: the land of Israel, the people of Israel, the Torah of Israel, and the temple of Israel. Only when the three are tied together will the fourth be restored. Only then, when Israel, the people, and the Torah are bound and united together, will the fourth inheritance, the third temple, be rebuilt. Thank you for listening and giving of your time. If you would like to respond or react to any of the points discussed, feel free to write on the group Facebook page, What Does Judaism Say About? Or more privately by email at whatdoesjudaismsayabout@gmail.com. One word, whatdoesjudaismsayabout@gmail.com. In addition, if you would like to receive a full transcript of this podcast, feel free to email me. Please subscribe to the weekly podcast so that you not miss even one topic. Shalom.